This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. You know, we are in the midst of our first conference tour for this year.
That's right. You know, we just finished a conference in Rogers, Arkansas, and that's what our interview is going to be with one of the people we met there. But You know how I just was struck again how much I love homeschool conferences and family life conferences too. I love seeing people face to face. I love speaking with you. That's a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, it is.
But I love seeing what God's doing in people's lives. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I had a couple of insights this weekend, and I'm going to be kind of processing this a little bit in my head. One of them is that, you know, really, what is our purpose on this earth? You know, the old catechism says to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. You know, that everything is meant to be for God's glory, and that's what our interview is going to be talking about. But attached to that is the concept that we are servants, that we are here to serve one another and to serve other people. And we really, you know, can see that in what we're allowed to do at the homeschool conferences, because, you know, we're giving our time and we're there, and really it's a ministry of helping other families. It's we're there to answer questions and to encourage and to challenge where necessary.
Well, you know, and I just love to see though what God does, because I didn't do any of this. We do several sessions where we talk about our experience, like with, you know, our son that has dyslexia. We didn't do any of those sessions.
No.
But somehow, I might have mentioned it on the side, or you know, somehow several parents heard that we had a child who had dyslexia. Actually, he's an adult now. And they came and they got help.
Right.
And, you know, two different moms I talked to for a long time, maybe an hour each.
Yeah.
And just poured information into them. And I just thought, you know, I love those providential appointments, you know?
Well, we see them every time we venture out. Every time that we have an opportunity to speak or to meet with people, that there seem to be certain people that God sends. There's some, you know, we may speak to 2,000 people over the course of the weekend in the big halls, but there will always be one or two that we come back to the hotel room at night and say, that was the person I was supposed to meet this weekend.
Yes, the ones I can't wait to come back and tell you about. You know, I was thinking about that last night. We're staying with a family here outside Kansas City, and they had a Bible study last night, and they played a video by Michael Jr., and he was talking about having the attitude in our interactions with other people of giving to them instead of trying to get something from them.
Yeah.
And you know how it went really well with yesterday. We visited the Walmart Museum, which was so much better than I anticipated it would be. But it talked a lot about the philosophy of entrepreneurship, which I love. I'm a fourth generation entrepreneur. But it kept coming back to Mr. Walton's attitude that we have to give good value, we have to help people, and we do well by doing good.
That is a good old American proverb that Benjamin Franklin first published, I think. But he was quite right, you know, that the great, tremendous rewards that he saw in his own life, and then the companies just continued to expand, were based on that idea that I'm going out to serve people. I want to give them a way to improve their quality of life while reducing the cost.
Yes.
And so I'm willing to forego maximized profit for myself in order to pass the savings on to average consumers. And of course, that just expanded and expanded and expanded. And it really does, it just shows kind of how the reward of being a servant first rather than being a profiteer.
Well, you know, it's biblical that we're supposed to be servant leaders. We're supposed to be servants first. And like Michael Jr. was talking about, it changed everything for him when he stopped trying to get a laugh from people and started trying to give them an opportunity to laugh.
I think we could probably do a whole program on this kind of concept.
It's really cool.
We need
but
to
anyway,
think
we need to get to our interview, and you got to interview to do this interview, so I'll let you introduce it and take it from here.
Okay.
But, you know, just isn't God good to let us be a part of what he's doing on earth?
I think it's fantastic. All right, so let's cut on back over to the interview. This was recorded at the Teach Them Diligently conference in Rogers, Arkansas, just this past weekend. Well, hello from the exhibit hall at Teach Them Diligently, the Northwest Arkansas edition. We are in Rogers, Arkansas for this weekend, and Melanie is not with me. She's meeting and counseling and interacting with some of the mothers and fathers and other folks that we're meeting up here. But as our guest this week, I've got Bob Shogren. Bob and his collaborator, Gerald Robinson, are the authors of Dog and Cat Theology. And they and his wife, Debbie, and they got a whole bunch of resources about teaching theology at the family level. But I just want to welcome Bob here. We want to talk about just what this is all about. So thanks, Bob, for joining us.
Thank you, Hal, for having me.
I appreciate it. Well, I got to say, I first ran across you at another conference, and it's been a few years. And the funny thing about being an exhibitor and a speaker is you see everybody, and you don't often get to sit down and talk with them.
Yes.
And so I saw your booth, and, you know, cat and dog theology sounds like something new. And I'll be honest, when I'm one of these theological traditionalists, and when I see something that says new in my head, I'm thinking, then it's questionable. But then I actually got to talk to you, I think, back at NCHE in Winston-Salem, North Carolina last year.
Okay.
I started to understand a little more about what you're teaching, what your purpose is. And I said, wait a minute, I think I agree with this. This is not something this is not something that I need to be cautious about. So why don't you just give me a real, just give us a capsule overview. What do you mean by cat and dog theology?
Cat and dog theology is a way of looking at life. It asks a very simple question.
Mm-hmm.
Do we live for God or does God live for us? Okay. Though most Christians will say we live for God, most Christians act as if God lives for them. Their prayers are me, my, and I. Their worship songs are me, my, and I. They go to church. Am I happy? Do I like this? Am I being fed? Am I being happy here in this church?
Uh-huh.
And without realizing, we're living for ourselves in a Christian context. So we try to differentiate between those two through a joke about the differences between a cat and a dog.
Okay.
A dog says, you pet me, you feed me, you shelter me, you love me. You must be God. And a cat says, you pet me, you feed me, you shelter me, you love me. I am God.
Well, we've had both cats and dogs, and I can vouch that that's their behavior. That's the
exactly.
psychology of those animals. And that's, you know, that is so true. I think we know the right answers. We don't often live the right answers. It's very easy to get distracted and to be living something different than what we, you know, say that we believe.
Right. And that joke is in book form called Cat and Dog Theology.
Okay.
That book has gone around the globe. It is being taught right now in the underground church in China, in Russia, in India, in Africa. We're actually training this week in Africa and Southeast Asia. It's all over the world.
Uh-huh.
And my wife and I became empty nesters about, 5 years ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so we decided that, because I'm a speaker, I travel the world and
right.
speaking.
Right.
And we decided we needed to put this in a homeschool format. We homeschooled all four of our kids.
Okay.
We've got four kids ages 29 to 23 right now.
Okay.
We homeschooled all four of our kids, and we decided that we needed to help homeschoolers get beyond cat theology and really begin to embrace what it means to live for the glory of God. So we began to create homeschool curriculum. The first one was a high school curriculum.
Uh-huh.
We went to our first set of homeschool conventions, first one I'd ever been to. My wife had been to 19, others by herself.
Right.
But I went to the first one to sell, and people loved it and said, wow, this is fantastic, but we've got little kids. So
okay.
my daughter, who was then a college graduate and was teaching in Palestine in Israel,
mm-hmm.
Came home for the summer and took our cat and dog theology and put it in children's form. So we have a, right now, it's been many years, right now we have a kindergarten form.
Right.
We have two elementary forms, we have a middle school form, and we have four high school forms, helping kids to learn to realize life is not about them. It is about living passionately for the glory of God
mm-hmm.
and trying to understand what that means for them.
Well, that is awesome. That is a very worthwhile thing, because you're right. I mean, there's so much of
modern American evangelicalism that, like you say, it's therapeutic. It's, you know, it's something that I feel good about because I, you know, I have my time reserved for God, and I'm not afraid to wear a cross sometimes. And although, I mean, to be frank, it is becoming more of a risk even to do those, you know, pro forma type of things. I was talking with somebody at a men's conference recently, and he said that his daughter was actually disciplined by her public school because she wore a little cross necklace. I mean, just even the minimal testimony, people are starting to react
right.
to. But, you know, what you're saying, though, is really getting people to grasp and to live out the fact that God created us and God rules the entire universe for His glory.
Right, and much of the church doesn't know that. How, and they don't know it because of one primary reason.
And why is that?
Most Christians have been taught that Jesus died solely for us.
Right.
Oh, but once you understand Colossians chapter 1, 19 and 20,
yes.
In Colossians chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, it says that Jesus Christ, God was pleased to have the all fullness dwell in Him,
right.
and through Him to reconcile to Himself. Reconcile to Himself, you would assume it would say all people.
Right.
It doesn't say all people.
Right.
It says all things.
Okay.
Wait a second. Christ died for things?
For all of creation?
For all of creation. Not only things in the earth, it says, and things in heaven. He died for the stars. He died for the planets we've never seen. He died for the universe. Why would He die for that?
And you could go into the intangible things to redeem things like love and our work and our interaction as, you know, citizens
right.
in a country, and, you know, to bring all things into subjection to God's rule again.
And you know, when you understand why He did that, it was based largely on Genesis chapter 3.
Right.
That the ground, the earth, the actual universe that we are in now is in a state of being cursed.
Right.
Cursed is the ground. And so what Colossians 1, 19 and 20 is trying to tell us is that Christ not only died for us, He died for things on the earth. He died for the grass, the trees, the flowers. They're not as green. They're not as vibrant. They're not as wonderful as when Adam and Eve first saw Him on this planet.
Right.
They're in a cursed state. And that curse overflowed into the universe as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it says Christ died for the things in the heavens as well. So now all of a sudden you've got Christ died for us. He died for the things on the earth. He died for the things in heaven. Is there anything else Christ died for? And the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that in John 12, 27 and 28. In the context, Jesus is one day away from the cross. As He's one day away from the cross, He's going to go be with His heavenly Father.
Right.
But He's talking to His disciples. And as He talks to His disciples, He basically opens up His heart and says, guys, I don't want to do this. This is going to be hard. This is going to be painful. And so we read in John 12, 27, 28, now my heart is troubled. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. So Christ is saying, I came for the purpose of dying. Even though I don't want to do it, but I came for it. And then He says a very simple word, Father. Which means if you're sharp with looking at the scriptures, you realize, hey, He's done talking to His disciples. He's now addressing His heavenly Father.
Right.
He's about to die one of the worst deaths any human can endure, death on a cross, not death because of nails between the hand and nail between 2 feet. Rather, he's dying a slow suffocation. We all know that.
Right.
That muscles get paralyzed, can't breathe, and you suffocate to death. He's about to die one of the worst deaths any humans can endure. He's about to talk to His Heavenly Father about it. And I ask my audiences this question, Hal. Do you think Jesus is going to talk to His Heavenly Father about the primary reason for why He's going to the cross, or a secondary reason for why He's going to the cross? All my audiences say primary. I say, I agree, primary. I say, notice what the text does not say. The text does not say, Father, save these kind, wonderful, worthy people from hell. They don't deserve it. In fact, Jesus didn't even mention us. What? He didn't mention us? That's right. He said, Father, glorify Thy name.
Yes.
Glorify Your name. In other words, the true driving passion to put Christ on the cross was to bring His Father glory.
Okay.
Why? Glory for restoring creation back to its original state, that the flowers would be the way that they're supposed to be, the grass, the trees, the planets, the stars, and that we as humans would get back to our original purpose, and that is glorifying God, because we couldn't do it separated from Him because of our sin.
Well, okay, go back to the old standard Presbyterian Catechism, the Westminster Catechism, question one. What is the chief end, or rather the chief purpose of man is?
To glorify God and to know him forever.
There you go.
And, there you go, yes, but also you got to be careful.
Yes.
Because what's the question? What's the chief purpose of man? Right. We don't ask what's the chief purpose of God.
Oh, no.
What is the chief purpose of God?
No, that's talking about our duty, our
place understand.
In God. Yes.
Yeah, but many people ask, what about us? See, a cat is always asking, what do people get out of it? A dog is asking, what does God get out of it?
Yeah.
So when a cat says, Jesus left the Father's glory, came to the earth, let me see, what did I get out of it? Oh, he took away my sins. Christ died primarily for my sins. No, he didn't. He died primarily for the glory of the Father. And that creates two different Christianities. One is selfish and self-centered. What can God do for me? One is God-honoring and God-glorifying. What can I do for God? And that brings about two different Christianities.
Well, that that requires some real thought.
Oh, absolutely.
That you really have to kind of draw back and puzzle over that, because so much of the church culture drives the other direction, and you're having to say, what if that is all going the wrong way? How do I get onto a different path altogether? I like this. I've got your brochure from your booth here. It just explained this whole concept from the curriculum standpoint. And you said, we've got 8 1-year Bible curriculums for your wonderful, then parenthetically, yet sometimes self-absorbed, self-centered, preoccupied student who can many times be found at the center of the universe, which is themselves. I mean, really, that's what you're saying.
Exactly.
And that is exactly. I mean, that is the, you know, what is the chief nature of the child is egocentrism. You know, I am the center of the universe. I can't conceive of anything outside of myself.
Absolutely. And that's what our old nature is all about. Our old nature wants to be at the center of all things. And that's why Christ came, was for us to die to ourselves, to live for the glory of the Father, to realize life is not about us. We are here to glorify God. But let me help you to see what a cat thinks, what a cat really thinks, and how they derive this.
Sure.
Because a cat will say, let's think of this realistically. Jesus left the Father's glory for me. He suffered for me. Mm-hmm. He died for me. He's going back to heaven to build a mansion for me. Mm-hmm. He's up there interceding for me. He's coming back a second time for me. Gee, I wonder who he lives for. He must live for me.
And that's the problem. Because all the other things are true, but that's not...
They're secondary.
Those are the secondary.
Yes.
Those are the benefits that we gain from his primary purpose.
But keep letting me play my game.
Okay.
So a cat says, Jesus did everything for me. He must live for me. Mm-hmm. And guess what Ephesians 5 tells us? Ephesians 5, chapter 1, verse 1 says this. Be imitators of God. And if I'm supposed to imitate God and God lives for me, who do you think I'm going to live for?
The person at the center of my universe.
Me.
Yeah.
I get it, though. He wants me to do it in a Christian context. Now I understand I'm not supposed to do all the bad things. I'm not supposed to do the sex outside of marriage, all the drugs, all the alcohol.
Right.
I'm supposed to go to church. I'm supposed to help with Sunday school. But I'm doing all that for?
For me.
Me.
For my reasons.
Exactly.
Because I see a benefit coming from it right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And here's the worst thing about a cat, Hal. Cats want God's blessings more than they want God. It's not God's blessing. It's not God that I want.
Right.
I want his blessings. I want to be able to get Amazon Prime. I want things second day. I want to have the fastest internet. I want to be able to shop whatever I want to do. I want to be able to play the games I want to be able to play. I want all that. So I'm gonna go to church. I'm going to do all the right things so that God will bless me, so that I can have his blessings, because it's all about me being blessed.
And so much of the time, you know, even if we are not intentionally saying, I'm going to go to church and put the quarter in the slot and God is going to give me this blessing because I've claimed it, and I've seen that. Oftentimes we live that because we don't receive the blessings and we give in to the disappointment. Mm-hmm. To say like, well, I thought I was going to get better from life than this.
Sure.
I thought that things were going to turn out better and I'm disappointed that they didn't, rather than saying, you know what? I woke up this morning and I drew breath.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that video. I'm not sure where that church was. The church did a video recently, like back at Christmas, of a man waking up in bed in one morning, and he's like wrapped in paper. Did you see that one?
No.
And so he sits up, and he tears the paper off his face, and he says, I'm alive. And he looks at his wife, and she's wrapped up in paper, and he peels the paper off, and she opens up her eyes. He says, I've got a wife. And he's going through the house, and he's just ecstatic because it's like, there's, look, this light switch. Lights come on when I turn it. And he's just thrilled at everything that we just say is commonplace.
Yep.
Because he understands his place in the world. Mm-hmm. You don't deserve any of it. And God gave you a gift today.
Yeah.
So we're here talking about it.
Yeah. And so, let me help you understand what a dog thinks as opposed to the cat.
Let's look at the dogs.
Okay. A dog says, let's think through this correctly theologically. Mm-hmm. Jesus left the Father's glory to glorify his Father. He suffered to glorify his Father. He died to glorify his Father. He's gone back to heaven, built a mansion for me to glorify his Father. He's up there interceding for me to glorify his Father. And he's coming back a second time to glorify his Father.
Right.
So it's a totally different perspective. And let me show you the two extremes of cat and dog theology.
Okay.
A cat looks at the cross and says, you know what? Jesus suffered for me. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I'll bet you that he doesn't want me to suffer. He doesn't want me to suffer. In fact, when I get to heaven, no more pain, no more sorrow, no more tears. And if he wants that for me in heaven, I bet you that that's what he wants for me here on this earth. Therefore, a cat knows they've been born, they know they're going to die, and they want to get between birth and death in the safest, softest, easiest, most comfortable fashion possible. Why?
Right.
It's all about them. Christ died for them. So they're going to use their free time, they're going to use their free money to have that safe, soft, easy, happy, comfortable life.
Right.
And that's why you have so many what I will call self-centered Christians in the church.
Yeah.
They're there. They go to church every Sunday. Maybe not every Sunday, but they go to church on a regular basis. But deep down inside, they're doing this for them so that they can be blessed. And that's what they're pursuing are blessings. A dog looks at it differently. A dog says, no, no, no. That's not what I see when I see the cross. When I look at the cross, I say, you know what? Jesus suffered to glorify the Father. Therefore, he's left me an example. I should be willing to suffer to glorify the Father.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, you have two different theologies. One that rejects suffering, one that will embrace suffering if that's what God wants for them.
Yeah, and it really does come down to a biblical illiteracy. Because you read the rest of the New Testament, and there's plenty in there about being patient under sufferings, rejoicing in suffering, rejoicing in losing things and being deprived of things, and either embracing death if we're called to that, what we would think too early or unjustly, because it glorifies God. And yet, that's clearly what Jesus taught and what the apostles taught. And if we would read our Bibles and not gloss over the uncomfortable passages, we'd actually perhaps see that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, okay, I see this is a...
Cat theology, the epitome of cat and theology is health and wealth theology.
Right. Yeah.
Health. That's I got to stay healthy till I'm 80 or 90 years old, and I've got to have wealth. If I don't have that, it must have been failure on my part because of a lack of faith.
Yeah.
Or God wasn't faithful, and they walk away. Most of us evangelicals reject that, but we have our own humanism.
We do, and it's more subtle.
Much more subtle. What DeVern Fromke calls evangelical humanism.
Right.
And that is that the chief end of Christianity is not the happiness of man when he is alive, i.e. health and wealth, but rather the happiness of man after he dies.
Okay.
And that means we strive toward the goal of saving people from hell. And everything revolves around saving people from hell. And we never get a chance to smell the roses. We never get a chance to see the glory of God. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I've been in missions. My original trek in all this has been the Muslim world, working among Muslims. I still work with Muslims. But I've seen too many missionaries who come home from the field and they divorce. Why? Usually it's because the husband was so focused on reaching Muslims for Christ, he neglected his wife, he neglected his kids, and his wife and kids said, if this is what it means to be a missionary, if this is what it means to be a Christian, I'm done. I've had it. One child was once reported as having said, I wish I'd been born a Muslim. My dad would have spent more time with me.
Ow.
Exactly, because it's evangelical humanism. We got to save people from hell. Everything else takes second place. And the glory of God takes second place. True Christianity says the chief end of Christianity is to glorify God.
Right.
I glorify God in my marriage. I glorify God in my parenting. I glorify God in my work. I glorify God in my outreach. I glorify God in all areas of life. And once you begin to see that and understand that, everything else begins to fit into place.
You know, along that line of everything, the verse that just kind of drifted up in my mind there was when Jesus was rebuking the Pharisees for being so detail-oriented. He said, you know, that you tithe all of these garden herbs, basically, but you're leaving the larger issues undone.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't say, throw out the other thing. He says, this you should have done without leaving the other undone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, whether it's missions or whether it's excellence in the workplace or whether it's your service to the homeschooling community or whatever, oftentimes I see in the evangelical leadership world that lack of balance, that lack of saying, yes, I'm gonna invest heavily in my local church because God's called me to do that, and yet what does God tell us about becoming a leader in the church? They should be men who rule their homes well. You know, the state of their marriage and their parenting and their children and the state of their household is one of their qualifications for being a leader in the church. So how can you have that out of balance? And so, I see exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. It's good that you make that distinction, that there's a more subtle trap that a lot of us, we can look at the extreme and say, oh, that's extreme. We can stay out of the health, wealth, gospel. We know that when we see it. But what we don't realize is where we ourselves are going astray.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Now, let me continue on with this glory of God theme.
Go, please.
If everything is about the glory of God,
yep,
we need to ask ourselves a question. How can we bring God his greatest glory?
Okay.
We do that, one, individually, two, corporately.
Okay.
Individually, the way we bring God his greatest glory is by delighting in him more than anything else. Mm-hmm. More than in marriage, more than in family, more than in our children, more than in anything, but delighting in God.
Okay.
That's individually. That's where a lot of Christians get messed up. Their children are more joy to them than God.
Yeah.
Their marriage is more joy to them. Their work is more joy to men than God. That's where we get messed up. But corporately, how do we bring God corporate the greatest glory? I challenge people that we bring God his greatest glory when there are people from every tongue, every tribe, and every nation worshiping together in harmony.
Okay.
And this is why Jesus said, I want people from every nation, every ethnic group, every people group. He could have said, go therefore make disciples of 80% of the world, 70% of the world, or like what we're doing today, 11% of the world.
Right.
We've basically reached one out of every 10 people. But he said, no, I want people from every tongue, every tribe, and every nation. Why? When you and I are there with people from every tongue, every tribe, and every nation, then and only then will God reveal his greatest glory. You ask anybody who has worshiped God with people from other cultures in their culture, they will all say the same thing. My vision of God got greater. And that's the principle. God reveals more of his glory when we worship him with people from other cultures. And so when we are there with people from every tongue, every tribe, and every nation, then and only then will God reveal his greatest glory. That's why we have in our curriculum the whole idea of world missions.
Okay.
And why in all of our material we have missionary stories. We weave it together because this is what God is doing. This is his goal. Mm-hmm. And Christ isn't going to come back until every nation is reached, every people group is reached. He says, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. Christ isn't going to come back until every nation is reached. We, the church, have a job to do. I thought for the longest time in my Christian life, we're just to be good people, twiddle our thumbs, raise some good kids, go to church, and wait until Christ comes back again. Nobody knows when it is, only God the Father.
Right.
But we're just to be good people. I had no idea that we, the church, have a job to do. And until we, the church, do this job, he's not coming back. So I began to see all of a sudden world missions is not only a high priority, it is the ultimate goal for which God is shooting for here on this earth. That's how we corporately reveal God's greatest glory. This answers the question, not what do the Muslims get out of it, not what do the Buddhists get out of it, not what do the Hindus get out of it. They get to go to heaven. No. What does God get out of it? Which is a dog constantly asked. What does God get out of it?
Right.
God reveals his greatest glory. And then I began to see even beyond that. I began to realize Ephesians 2, 6 and 7, when it says that Jesus, we are seated with Christ in the heavenly realms in order that in the coming ages God might show the incomparable riches of his grace in eternity future. How does God want to show off his grace forever and ever and ever? I realized a couple of things. Number one, heaven is about what God gets to do more than it is about what we get.
Okay.
And what does God get to do? He gets to show off his grace forever. How is he going to show off his grace? I ask my audience is that question all the time. And they say things that are what I call way inside the box. What are way inside the box?
All right.
Well, they say, oh, he's going to give us a relationship with him. And I said, oh, that's way inside the box. He's going to die for our sins. So that's way inside the box. He's going to love us for eternity. I said, that's way inside the box. Then they're really stuck.
Okay.
So I said, okay, you guys stuck? They say, yeah, we're stuck. What is it? So I said, okay, what does God want to do for us?
Mm-hmm.
I said, can he make us gods? They look at us and say, no. I said, no, he couldn't make us gods, could he? No, that's ridiculous. Mm-mm. But could he allow us to rule and reign with him over the universe? And they drop their mouths.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they say, that's grace. I said, yeah, is there any verses that back that up? And then we just start going into verse after verse.
Do you
after
not know
verse,
that we will judge angels?
We will judge angels. If you're victorious and sit with me on my throne, you will have rule over the nations. If you endure, you will reign with me. All of a sudden, all these verses about ruling and reigning, and we are co-heirs with Christ. Yeah. What does Christ inherit? Hebrews 1, 1 and 2 says he inherits all things. Oh, so all of a sudden, Christ inherits all things, which means the universe.
Right.
We will inherit the universe. What will we be doing over the universe? We will be reigning over the universe. All of a sudden, you see this plan for God goes way beyond our 80 years.
Wow.
So I help the seminar I just did, it's on my website, unveilingglory.com or catanddogtheology.org, either one.
Mm-hmm.
I help my audience to see you're not raising your kids for the next 80 years of their life. You're raising your kids for the next 800 million years of their life.
What a different perspective that gives you.
Oh, it's huge. Every time, like the seminar that I just gave, I said to these people, do you think this was helpful? And they're just like, oh, yeah. It's a whole different perspective. I had the woman come to me, and I have this happen many a time. Woman just came up to me and just said, this was worth the entire convention.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things in our particular ministry that we have to really struggle to get across to people is raising their children just to be adults, just to get them from age 10 to age 20 and making a transition. And you're saying millions and billions of years to the limits of eternity, and you're right. You're totally right. And how much we need God's grace when we struggle to even handle things in our own lifetime.
Right. So one of the, I know it's time's coming short. One of the greatest ways that I help people to see this is in a very simplified form. It's much more complex, but a very simplified form. There's a difference between having your name recorded in heaven and being rewarded in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Having your name recorded in heaven is having a relationship with Christ.
Yep.
You can get into heaven. But being rewarded in heaven is something totally different. There will be people who will be rewarded greatly in heaven.
There will be degrees.
And there will be people who lose everything, but they're still going to be in heaven.
Yeah.
And that's why Jesus said to the sheep in Matthew 25, take your inheritance, a kingdom prepared for you. A kingdom?
Yeah,
I want you to rule and reign with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says also, there'll be some Christians who forfeit that kingdom. 1 Corinthians 3:12 through 15, forfeit because their life was wood, hay, and straw. They wasted their lives away like a cat. They lived self-centeredly in the church their whole life. They were doing it for themselves. They wanted God's blessings more than God. And he says, I'm not going to reward you for that, and you're not going to be in my Father's government ruling and reigning because you've shown me you're not interested. These 80 years, Hal, are so important. It's not just I pray the prayer, I'm getting into heaven, okay, everything's cool. No, how you live your life will determine how you rule and reign with God forever. And that is our job as parents, as homeschoolers. It's not just getting them to pray the prayer as a four-year-old and then be a good person.
That is so good. Well, look, I've been talking with Bob Shogren. He is the author, along with Gerald Robinson, of Cat and Dog Theology. And it's a book, but there's also a whole range of curriculum here. And give us those websites again, how you can get in touch with
best
Bob
way to,
and his ministry.
Best way to do it is just go to catanddogtheology.org. Catanddogtheology.org.
All one word.
All one word, spelled out and, catanddogtheology.org or .com. I've got both of them. And you can, up at the top, you get all the different levels. We've got kindergarten all the way to high school. Mm-hmm. People can go there, look at it. There's videos, testimonies, everything. Yep. Lives are being changed.
Great. Bob, thanks. That's a lot to think about.
Thanks,
Al.
We
appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, that was our interview with Bob Sjogren of Cat and Dog Theology and Unveiling Glory. And I hope you enjoyed it. There is a lot to chew over in that. But we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you for listening. We know there's many things you can do with your time, but we appreciate that you shared some of that with us, and we hope that you found it helpful. You know, if you do, there are ways that you can support this ministry, too.
For one thing, tell people about our podcast, but also, if you want to just keep the ministry going, and we do need your help, go out to patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, /Hal and Melanie, mm-hmm. and you can support this ministry there, $1 a month, $100 a month, whatever the Lord leads you to do.
And it's all taken with great thanks on this
yes.
end. So, yeah, come out to patreon.com, patreon.com/Hal and Melanie, if you'd like to be a regular supporter of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. So until next week, I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
Thank you. God bless you for listening.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.